Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here and Sean Rourke out there. Sean, how you doing, man? What's going on?
I'm fired up, dude. And I gave up caffeine a long time ago, and I'm still fired up.
Okay.
So I'm taking over the rant that you tried last week, but was way too melatonin-induced.
Okay.
So here's my rant for today.
Go.
Connor McDavid has 22 points, 24 points. He could score 100 this season. It's not going to be easy, right? You got to go wait, 1.7 points? If one more person tells me that Connor McDavid can't score 100 points in a 56-game season, I'm going to lose my mind.
Okay.
Why can't he do it? And why do we as hockey fans and as hockey establishment always have to put the damper on everything? Alex Ovechkin can't catch Wayne Gretzky. It's impossible. There's not enough games. There's no way he can do it. There's no way this can happen. There's no way. Was there no way that Wayne Gretzky could score 50 goals in 39 games? He did it. So why can't Connor McDavid score 100 points? And why can't his coach say, yeah, maybe he's a pretty good player. He could score 100 points. Maybe we should tune in and watch and see what he does. Instead of, you know, all the games, they're going to get really tight later on. You know, there's no way. This could never happen. It could happen. Let's enjoy it. And maybe if he doesn't do it, Leon Draisaitl does. So let's just enjoy it, because I know I enjoyed the hell out of the last two games that the Edmonton Oilers played.
I get all weirded out when you ask me rhetorical questions during your rant. I don't know if I'm supposed to interrupt you or answer them.
Never interrupt me.
All right. So it's a good rant. By the way, they play the Ottawa Senators seven more times. So there is a chance he can get 100 points in those seven games. We'll get to that later. Let's bring in our colleague, because now you ranted. Now I want to hear his reaction. Tom Galitti, our colleague based out of Washington, D.C. Tom? You heard the rant. What's your reaction to it?
Well, I agree that he can get 100 points. I think, and you mentioned one of the reasons, because they have seven games left against Ottawa, which we're going to get to that later, I know, but I'm a little confounded by them not being better than they are. But, you know, if you watch the games up in that division and they only play in that division, it's made for him to get 100 points. There's not a lot of defense being played in some of those games. There are some good goalies up there, but the other ones are being challenged. And I think you're going to see a lot of high point totals up in that division this year.
Look, I mean, they've played 12 games, right? And so that would mean he's got 44 left. He's on pace for it. Right? I mean, that would put him on pace for it. And yes, playing Ottawa seven more times, if Ottawa continues down this road, certainly will help. I think it would be absolutely amazing if he did it. I would love to see him do it. It's been like watching 1980s hockey all over again, watching the Edmonton Oilers play these past few games. I think it will tighten up, but that doesn't mean it's going to tighten up and McDavid's not going to get three a night. You know, I mean, that, like, if the games tighten up all the time and Connor McDavid can get three a night. So, Sean, I'm with you. I'm in. I'm looking forward to it. I want to see if he can do it. I think it's possible. Mathematically, it's certainly possible.
Dude, he had 7 points in the last two games. He took six shots on goal. Their power play is at over 25%. They have more talent than last year. They're going to, at the rate their goaltending is going, they're going to have to play 7-6 games to win. Yeah. Koskinen's played every game except for one. You know, Mike Smith's maybe coming back, but I wouldn't put them in the top half of the league in goaltending. So they're going to have to score goals. They're clearly playing to that strength. And you know, just watching Connor McDavid, I think he's better than he was last year. Or maybe better than he's been in the league so far. To me, it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to flirt with it. And I guess my rant was more about the fact, and I'm as guilty as everybody else, why when great things are happening, our first reaction is always, oh, well, there's no way that could happen. Like, why? Like, in every other sport, it's like, oh, hey, this guy could maybe do this. It's awesome. Let's, you know, check it out. And you know, I don't know if it's the mindset of the team first or what it is, but anytime an individual is going to do something great, we're like, no way that could happen. And Tom, you lived it, and you live it to this day with Ovechkin. He's done things that none of us could ever imagine. And every time somebody brings up, can he catch Gretzky, the default is no way. Math just doesn't work. I don't care about math. I don't. These guys are elite athletes, and Alex Ovechkin has done everything that he's ever put his mind to. My point being, why don't we embrace these flights of fancy?
I actually think people are, you know, and he's still a long way away, but I think people are embracing, and they were last year before the season was shut down, unfortunately. They were embracing the idea of Alex Ovechkin going after that record, Wayne Gretzky record. Wayne Gretzky is embracing it. So as we get closer, I think it'll be fun if he gets there. You know, we have to see how it goes. You know, he keeps on saying I'm a long way away, so we'll see how it goes. But I think people will embrace it as he gets close.
Okay, okay, okay. So let's continue down this path here. Can Tyler Toffoli score 50 goals this season? He's on pace for it. Can he score 50? Tom, leave it out to you.
Whatever the Vancouver Canucks did to him, if he played them every game, he'd definitely do it.
He's got eight against them.
He's got eight against the Canucks. Like, it's crazy that he's like a personal vendetta or something going on there. But not 50, I think, is going to be hard this year. I'm sorry, Sean, but I think 50 is going to be hard this year. I think he could do – I think there's going to be some 40-goal scorers, though, so – and he could be definitely one of them.
I'm not going to break character here. Of course somebody can score 50. Of course they can. Why can't they? And let's figure out who it's going to be and jump on that bandwagon and just beat it to death. And we can bring it up every week and talk about it and celebrate it. You know, I mean, it's been done in an NHL regular season with more games to come behind it, right? Cam Neely did 50 and 50. And I know he missed some games with injury, but he played 50 games and he scored 50 goals. So, and look, and again, I'm not a numbers guy. I understand the numbers are against all of these things, right? For Connor McDavid, he would have to score 1.8 points per game. He's at 2 right now. Nobody's done that during the salary cap era. I understand all that, but I just look at him and, you know, maybe it's just the excitement of having so much hockey every night and watching 3 or 4 games and just being giddy over it. But, you know, I'm on the Connor McDavid bandwagon. 100 points is coming.
All right. All right. And you know what? I wanted to talk about Toffoli and the Habs anyway, so because I'm on the Toffoli bandwagon with the way that he's been scoring goals, the way that they've been scoring goals, averaging 4.4 a game. Yes, I know they're loading it up against Vancouver. They got 28 goals in 5 games against Vancouver. But guys, I don't know where you picked them to finish in the North Division, but I had the Canadiens first. I picked them first, and I'm going to toot my own horn here after a certain, I think we're, you know, we're 10 games in for them. They look really good. Tom, what have you thought about the difference in Montreal, I guess, with Toffoli and Josh Anderson? I mean, these guys got 15 goals between them and they weren't on the team last year.
They're just a deep team. I think we saw, you know, it's interesting. Last year, at the beginning of the season, I remember them coming into Washington and they played them very, very well. And that was when Washington was playing well. And I was thinking, wow, this team is pretty good. And then they had a bunch of injuries. And then we saw some of it in the playoffs last year. And now you've added those guys, like you mentioned. And I think they're just a complete team as far as their four lines and the way they play. And I think Claude Julien's done an excellent job there. I did not pick them to win a division, but I had them in the playoffs. And I think they are the best team in that division right now. So they have the goaltending. They have some solid defensemen. They have actually too many defensemen, it feels like. They said, you know, Victor Mete can't get in a lineup sometimes. I think they have an excellent team. I think they're the most complete team in that division.
I'd like to see them play Toronto this week. I don't know that Toronto's the best team in the division, but it'll at least be a fair test, right? The fact that you can't play the other elite teams in the league, you know, they're not going to play a Boston, they're not going to play a Washington, they're not going to play a Vegas, a Colorado. So they can't really measure themselves up league-wise. They can only do it division-wise. So I would like to see them play Toronto twice and see where it's at. The one thing I will say about the Montreal Canadiens, it's amazing what a couple of big wingers will do for you that can skate, huh? Those guys, they go to the front of the net, they go play in the dirty areas, they take a little bit of a beating, but I would say all their goals, you talked about 15 goals, 12 of them have come within 8 feet of the opposing net. Like, they're not coming down the wing lifting one leg like Messier and you know, ripping these 40 foot slappers, wristers, snapshots, whatever you want to talk about. They're going and they're tying up a defenseman and they're blinding the goalie, and then they're tipping and they're grabbing rebounds. And size still matters in this league. I know it's turned into a skating league, but when you find a guy like Josh Anderson who can skate, or Toffoli, and still has size and has that will, that which is what you need, is the will to go to the front of the net, you know, it makes all the difference. It opens up a lot of ice for a lot of other guys too. Like, that's the other thing we're not talking about. We're talking about their goals, but the fact that you know, their lines are more settled and they're tying up more of the D because they're always around the opposing net, leaves a lot more room on the perimeter for other players.
And they're getting good play from their centers. And that's always been a long time problem, right? For the Montreal Canadiens is their center depth, and they're getting quality contributions from their centers. And it goes without, like, I mean, it's so important to have two goalies. We've seen it. And now the, it, to me, it's just the ability that Claude Julien can have to just give spot starts here to Jake Allen and feel nothing in, about the Montreal Canadiens is going to change when you give that start to Jake Allen instead of Carey Price, and you're seeing him do it and nothing about them does change. They still play the exact same way. In years past, it was not like that because they didn't have anybody behind Price that they really believed in, and they did change their game a little bit. And now it's just go play. We believe in the other guy too. And I think that's so key for them, right, Tom? I mean, the idea of two goalies, and you look at it in Washington right now, they don't have that recipe at this point. I mean, I know Vanacek's been, you know, a revelation, but they don't have that recipe. And it makes such a difference when you have that.
I agree completely. I mean, I looked at their trade for Allen, and I liked it in theory because they definitely needed a guy like him. But I also looked at how much money they have. I don't remember it is off the top of my head now, but they had like a quarter of their payroll towards goalies, and I thought that was a little strong. But they have some good young players, and they have some other guys on really good contracts that help that. And yes, I agree. You know, they needed a guy like that the team, not only the coach but the team, could trust when they were in there, so they could keep playing the same way. And I have that now. And I think also that's a good role for Jake Allen. He may not be an everyday goalie. He could fill in when you need him to, but he's the number two, the clear number two to Carey Price. And he's had an experience now doing that where he comes in. He came in, you know, behind Binnington in St. Louis that 1 year. So I think it's a good fit for them there.
He's actually been the better goalie. And I know the sample size is small. He's played 4 games and Carey's played 6. But, you know, I mean, better save percentage, better goals against average, you know, and it's not like they're saving him either. I mean, he's played against Edmonton, gave up 1 goal. He's played against Calgary, gave up 1 goal. I mean, he's had 3 games where he's been above 920 in save percentage out of his 4 games. He had the 1 clunker against Vancouver, and he still won that game. He gave up 3 goals on 17 shots, and he still won because Montreal scored 8 probably. I mean, it's a great luxury, and I don't think when they did it, they envisioned what we have now with a ton of back-to-backs, 3 and 4, where you know, we just talked about Edmonton, and maybe their biggest problem is that they've had to play Koskinen 11 out of their 12 games so far, and he looked tired, and he looked better last night because he got a rest. They gave him a full day off and you know, allowed him to kind of mentally recoup a little bit, but he was looking a little dogged by the end of that 10-game stretch.
I wanted to move on because, Tom, I know you were following the Line A debut, which was Tuesday night. We're recording this Wednesday. We're going to have Nick Foligno, the Columbus Blue Jackets captain, on with us in a little while to talk a little bit more about this. But, Tom, I watched a lot of that game. I thought Line A was good. I think Line A can be way better, and he knows it. What was your takeaway from watching the game, and what'd you hear from them after the game to that, you know, led you to believe maybe something more is coming from Patrick Laine sooner rather than later, I guess?
Watching it, he looked like a guy who hadn't played a game in almost 3 weeks. And he looked like a guy that was new to the team. And it looked like they, you know, a guy, when you get a big name guy comes into a team and he doesn't know what to do. And he said this after the game, like he was trying to pass. You know, he's a guy who they need to shoot. They've talked about his passing, and he's a very good passer, but he was trying to pass more than shoot. And I thought like guys didn't quite know what to do with him as far as, do I get him the puck? That's first game things. So I think definitely, you know, as they go on here, maybe as soon as tomorrow, when Thursday, when they play again, you'll see a more comfortable Patrick Laine. He's getting a practice in on Wednesday with them. That's going to help. I think he talked about it, and John Tortorella talked about it. He needs to shoot the puck more. And, you know, they brought him in to be a goal scorer. And I think that will come. It just was, I think there was a lot of, you know, he hadn't had a full practice yet. He had 1 morning skate. He'd been off for all that time. I think it was just hard for him to come in and step into the game. And considering that, he still looked like, you know, he was still a pretty good player, obviously, but I think with time that'll get a lot better.
I would assume mentally it's got to be tough, right? You're coming into a new room and you want to fit in and you want to make friends and you know, you want to be, hey, I'm part of the team. And then you walk out on the ice and you take 15 shots, right? And everybody's kind of looking at you and saying, whoa, like, and that's what he's supposed to do. And that's what they want him to do. But I would assume as the guy that's doing that, all of a sudden you're like the guy on the podcast that talks all the time. Big. He's a hockey player. Eventually it'll come and he'll just do what comes naturally, which is to shoot a shot that, you know, Nick Foligno is going to talk about it and other players on the team have talked about it, is unlike any other one in the league.
Yeah. He just still did. He had 7 shot attempts in a game. I mean, he only had 2 on net, but he had 7 shot attempts. But I agree. I was, as I was watching him, I think there were 3 or 4 times that he passed up pretty good looks that I think, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he's playing for the Winnipeg Jets, he would have taken, but they got him to score goals. He needs to shoot the puck. I thought he, you know, Tortorella's trying to find the right mixture. He's moving around the lines. It was a tough game because they're losing that game. They're down a lot in that game. So it's hard, but in a way it was good because maybe if you're John Tortorella, you do experiment. You're not rolling 4 lines. You're experimenting to see what works and what doesn't work. And maybe that can end up being a benefit for the Blue Jackets, but it looked like he fit. And I think they're going to love him there because he's the guy who is going to shoot the puck. And I would imagine after that game, and we'll ask Nick Foligno about this, but I would imagine after that game, they may have gone to him and be like, dude, shoot the puck. Like that's what you're supposed to do. Shoot. So I think he looked like he fit in. I'm really curious to see how things keep rolling for him with that team, because I think he can put up some pretty big numbers for them.
I agree completely. I just think it was a, you know, we've seen it before with other players. You come first game and you're just trying to feel your way through, and then add in the fact that he was in quarantine and all that other stuff. And it wasn't, I mean, some guys step right out of quarantine or whatever time off and they score a goal and do all the other stuff. But, you know, what he did was not, and you know, that was pretty normal for someone who went through what he went through.
Tom, did the Caps have an issue with keeping leads? I mean, this twice now, right? Against Boston, 3-0 both times. They were able to win the first one 4-3 in overtime, and then obviously lost the second one. Is that a concern for them?
I mean, it's early in the season, and it was a two game window. I was against a pretty good team, but I think they sat back in both games a little bit. They were not as aggressive in the third period, and they're still kind of finding their way under Pierre Laviolette. They have 15 points in 20 games, which anyone would take, especially considering the guys they had been missing with guys on COVID lists and injuries and stuff like that. But I think they're still kind of finding their way and doing the things. He wants them to get shots. He wants them to pressure with the puck in the offensive zone and not sit back like that, what they end up doing in the third period. They did it for parts of that game and were very successful with it. But I think they got a little conservative, and it's hard to switch it back once it starts going the other way. And the Bruins are a very good team, obviously. So that made it hard as well.
I think the Bruins are a better team than I thought they were. And I think they showed it in those two games. I mean, when you look at who contributed, you know, it was their big guys, but then it was a lot of role players, guys you've never heard of, you know, guys stepping up in the bigger roles. I think about that shot that Brandon Carlo made, like that. He's probably taken 50 shots in his career. It's just something that he doesn't do. And then he snipes one bar down. I mean, that was a beautiful goal. You know, I thought Trent Frederick played really well for them in a depth role. You see a lot of guys there coming out that were the question marks, right? When the season started, because they had lost Chara and some other pieces, and you were wondering what that young core, if they were ready to step up. And it's early in the season, but they've never given up in one game. They've come back a ton, and they look like a team that's going to be a serious contender again this year. I thought the window was closing, and I might have to rethink it a little bit.
Well, I think Cassidy's a really good coach. No, I mean, I think he is a really good coach. They know they have good goaltending. They have great leadership, and their leaders are their best players. I thought the Bruins would be good. And Sean, I mean, I think we need to give them credit here too for their ability to come back, but this is a veteran team. The one that they're 6-1-3 Washington, and they set a franchise record for consecutive point streak to start a season at 9 games. I think it was 6-0-3, but I'm still trying to figure them out. And Tom, you see them all the time. So I know they're good, but are they Stanley Cup contender good? It may be too early to even say that about any team right now, but I mean, to me, there's still a little bit of a mystery. Do you agree, Tom?
Well, I think there are positives out of what they've done. And again, no Evgeny Kuznetsov. He played the first four games and he's been on the COVID list since then. The guy who they thought was going to be their number one goalie, Ilya Samsonov, has played two games COVID list. They've had injuries. Lars Eller's been out four games. I think they had Justin Schultz was playing really, really well playing alongside Zdeno Chara. He gets hurt. All those things. So it's hard to really get a picture of in these 10 games, how good can they be? But I think they've done some good. I think what I've seen is that they've had some depth guys come in and play pretty well for them. Who would have thought they have this line with Carl Hagelin and Nick Dowd, Garnet Hathaway, who is their fourth line, has now become basically their checking line. They've played against all the top lines. They played head to head with Eichel's line and they didn't get anything. They played head to head with the Islanders with Borzal and he didn't have much in those games. And they did a pretty good job, I thought, against Bergeron's line in those games. So things like that happening, they're doing well. They're getting a lot. They want their defensemen to be involved. They're getting a lot of production from the defense, not just John Carlson Schultz. Before I got hurt, was getting goals. Guys like the Chara has a couple of goals. They're getting their guys involved. Trevor Reinsdijk scored his first goal with the Capitals the other day. So I think there is potential. You see a potential there that, and we all know like teams can sometimes get by in these situations with injuries and stuff like that, where they step up, but how long can they sustain it? But I think we're seeing a potential there where they do have the depth to be a better team than maybe people thought going into the season. And still a lot, the big question mark is in net, because Vitek Vanacek has played really well for them. But, are there some bumps in the road coming for him? And are we, when is Ilya Samsonov going to come back? That's still a big question mark as the season goes on.
And the one thing that slipped under the radar, and again, this goes back to my point of why don't we celebrate things, is Zdeno Chara went from being a seventh defenseman to being the number two defenseman and playing with John Carlson and contributing. And everybody's like, he's too old. Nothing good's going to happen out of this. If he's able to play 10 minutes, and be out there for the penalty kill in the last minute of the game, that's a good investment for the Capitals. Hey, it's a pretty good investment after 12 games. I mean, he's playing over 20 minutes a game. Tom mentioned he has a couple of goals and he's playing in huge situations.
Yeah, and Tom Brady's going to the Super Bowl again, because guys like that just find a way, right? I mean, they just continue to find a way. You know who's not finding a way? We teased it before. The Ottawa Senators. I'm surprised. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised that they're losing games. I'm surprised how they're losing games. Because I thought going into this season, with all the moves that they made, the additions that they made, that we would see Ottawa be a tougher out. Even early in the season, losing 3-2, 4-2, 3-1, those types of games. Their last seven games, 4-1, 6-3, 7-1, 5-1, 4-1, 8-5, 4-2. It's a lot of crooked scores. And if they don't figure out how to stop these crooked scores, within the next little while here, forget about their season. I worry about their young guys. I worry about how the toll this takes on some of those guys, because this is supposed to be a big development year for them. It's hard to develop when you're losing by 4 or 5 goals every game, when you're down 3-0 in the first period every game. I think this is a challenge here that Ottawa just has to right itself a little bit. But we talked about it before. Everybody in the North Division is like licking their chops when they get to play the Ottawa Senators. I didn't think it would be like that. I thought that they would be a real tough out.
I'm surprised. I'm with you. I saw them last year and they were competitive most times. There were some games, they had some games where it weren't as good, but I thought they really competed hard. And I thought, like you said, with the additions they made, they'd be a lot better. I think, you don't want to point fingers at one guy, but Matt Murray's got to be a lot better. The goalie, their goaltending hasn't been good enough. He's got to figure it out. His save percentage is under 850. I mean, that he needs to be better. So, and they're not helping him out either, but they need to get more saves. But it's just, I'm with you. I'm really surprised. I thought they would be more competitive. And there was their second game this season. They went and they beat Toronto and they played a really hard game. Like, this is the team I expect to see.
Yeah.
And then we haven't seen it since then.
No, it was the first game. They won 5. Yeah. I think it was their first game. Won 5-3. Then they lost 3-2. Then they lost 4-3 in overtime. And then I just reeled off the other 7 games that they played where they've just been crushed in every game.
Well, in a couple of them, they've been missing Thomas Chabot, who is really good defenseman. They basically have 2D and then 7 guys that are number 6. So when you lose one of the 2 big guys, you're in a world of hurt. Like, I can't imagine running that D and being like, no Thomas Chabot in the lineup, and all of a sudden here comes McDavid over the boards, and I'm like, how do I match up? What do I do? I don't have the guns to do this. I can't. But what I've liked out of them, you look at that first Edmonton game. Edmonton came out and blew their doors off in the first period, and they didn't buckle. Like, they came back, they made it a 4-2 game, and then they got up to 5. Like, there were times in both of those games where the next goal was going to determine how that game was going to go, and then the next goal was an Edmonton goal. And in both games, I don't know if it was the greatest goal that's ever been given up in the history of mankind. And I think that deflates a team. But, you know, I'm not ready to say that the Ottawa Senators can't compete. I think they need a couple of pieces. I think mentally they can compete, and I'm not worried about their kids yet, because their kids have kind of led the charge of not folding the tents and going home and saying, we're going to fight, right? Because in the end, all you have is you. Like, who knows if you're going to be with Ottawa forever? You're building a resume. You're putting tape out there. And, you know, we talked about it last week with Dubois with the shift before he got traded. Everybody saw that shift. Everybody that's making decisions on your future sees you in the third period of an 8-5 game and is making decisions about your body language, how hard you're trying. So if these young kids don't know that they're putting out a resume for their next contract, shame on them.
Well, no, it's not that to me, Sean. It's there, but everybody's human, right? I mean, and if you keep down this road, it's hard. It's hard to continue to play like this. But in a way, we can spin this into a positive and say, look, this is what happened to us in the first 10 games, and the bar is very low. Now we have to improve from this. And if you just look at it from that perspective, maybe Tom, you can hit on this too. If you look at it from that perspective, from Ottawa, then the next 46 games are important for them to see the growth from what they were in the first 10 games, or really the last 7 games. So it's a development season. That's what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be growing. Here's what they've been. Now, can they grow from it?
Yeah, I agree that they can still pull some positives out of this, especially for young players. I mean, yes, if they're probably not going to make the playoffs, but there's still positives to grow as far as you win games. You play well against good teams. That helps you also. And I think they had a foundation last year of being competitive, so they can get back to that. They need to just be better than they've been in the last few games. And I think as the younger guys get more of a chance, maybe that we'll see more of that. But I'm just a little dumbfounded by how they started this year, because I thought that they were going to be one of the more improved teams up there, and a little disappointed. But there's still season left to go, and they can still, you know, build it towards next season if they can't get in this season.
And they're swimming in the deepest of deep ends. Like, you look at some other teams that are trying to do the same thing, and you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, right? Like, I thought they were going to be, if not the worst team, close to the worst team in the league. And then, you know, Kevin Lankinen turns into Patrick Waugh, and they decide that they're going to play 2-1 games, and everybody's going to buy in, and they're fun to watch, and they're competitive, and they're blessed by having a much more even division where there's a lot more parity than perhaps there is in the North Division, where there's some clear haves and have nots.
And they're blessed by having two guys who are going to the Hall of Fame in Patrick Kane and Duncan Keith, who've been there and done that, who are playing well. And every time on the ice, making key plays. But you're right. The Blackhawks are a lot more fun to watch, and they're playing the type of game, frankly, that I thought we would see from Ottawa. You know, those lower scoring, tighter games. That's kind of what I said. But again, maybe if Ottawa had Patrick Kane and Duncan Keith, it would be a little bit of a different story. It does make that big of a difference to have those guys who, by the way, and I think this should be noted, have bought in to what is going on there in Chicago, at least for right now. And they're playing like it. In my opinion, they're playing like it. And, you know, they are a fun team to watch. They're play. I caught a little bit of their game against Carolina last night, and you know, they're right in it. And they're right, Sean, the division is far more even, for them to compete in that division. It, you could say the same for Detroit, but that's not the same case. But the Blackhawks have been better. What do you think, Tom?
I agree. They've competed well in that division. And, you know, let's not downplay, like, Carolina is a really good team. They played pretty well against a really good team last night. They weren't playing against, someone, a lesser team. They were playing against a team I think is going to be right there in that division with Tampa and with Dallas, that, you know, they're going to be right up there. So that was an impressive performance by them last night. And I think the mentioning of, you know, Duncan Keith and Patrick Kane, they make a big difference. And some people are like, oh, those guys might want out now. And all they've done is shown that that's not the case. Like you said, they bought in. And I think that's made a big difference for that team to have your two best players buy in and say, okay, let's get through this together. We're missing some guys and we're rebuilding. Let's get through this and let's see it through.
Patrick Kane must love this. Like, I'm sure he wants to be more competitive, but that cat's seeing 27 minutes of ice a game. He's playing half the game. Like, and we all know Patrick Kane. He loves to be on the ice and he loves to have opportunities to score. Colleton's not cheating him. Hey, over the board you go, son. Well, you caught your breath. Out you go. Like, literally for the last five games, he's averaged 27 minutes a game.
Yeah. No, he's got to love that. All right, before we get to Nick Foligno, I do think we need to bring up Tony DeAngelo and the New York Rangers. And, you know, obviously this situation, just to rehash, this goes back. You know, he had a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty in the first game of the season. He was scratched for the second game. The Rangers won it, so he was scratched for the third game. And then apparently Tony DeAngelo didn't respond very well to that. And then there was the incident after the game Saturday night against the Penguins. He was on the ice, miscommunication with Alexander Georgiev. Sidney Crosby scores the winner. And then there's an incident in the runway to the locker room between Georgiev and DeAngelo, a little bit of an altercation that had to get broken up. Next day, Tony DeAngelo is waived. The next day he clears waivers. So Saturday, Sunday, he's waived. Monday clears waivers, and Jeff Gorton, their general manager, says he is done. He is never playing for the Rangers again. This is a guy who had 53 points last year for them, was really good. You thought maybe the growth was coming, and he got a contract, two-year deal, $9.6 million, and now he's not going to play for the Rangers again. They're trying to explore options for him to see where they can move him, if there's a home for him in the National Hockey League. So, Tom, I'll start with you. It's a lot. What was your takeaway from this entire ordeal with Tony DeAngelo and the Rangers?
My takeaway is that the Rangers know how well he played for them last year, and they didn't want him on their team anymore. They had enough. They knew maybe somebody else will say, I look how well he played last year. Let's give him a chance. But your team sometimes determines what happens, like the players, how they react to him. And it seems clear that they felt like he could not fit in that locker room anymore and he couldn't be on the team anymore. So I can't question what the Rangers have done. I'm not saying maybe someone else can feel like Tony can help them and then he'll be able to fit in there. I don't know. But I think the Rangers had to did what they felt like they had to do for their locker room, not just for, you know, this wasn't just about, you know, what they said wasn't just one incident. This is something that was building, and they felt like for them to move up, they need to move on from Tony. And maybe this will be good for Tony if he gets a chance to move on somewhere else. I don't know.
They didn't know this seven games earlier. Like, there's multiple incidents. Like, look, good for them, and good that, you know, they made that decision and they stood by it and they said he'll never play for us again because of what he did. But, you know, you mentioned it wasn't the first strike or the second strike or the third strike. I mean, he had already built quite the resume when they gave him a new two-year contract. And, you know, what if the Rangers were better than they are? And what if Tony DeAngelo was on the same pace he was on last year instead of being minus six and having 1 point? Are things different at that point? I don't know the answer, but I mean, it's seven games removed from giving a guy a two-year, $10 million contract.
Yeah, and I've wondered the same thing, John. What if he was off to a better start? What if they were off to a better start? I mean, they're starting to play a little bit better now, but what if he was better than 1 point, an assist and a secondary assist and a minus six rating? Would this have happened? I have to believe that it would have, because this, you can have incidents with your coach. You can have stuff going on like that. But when it involves player altercations and when the room can be divided You can't have that, especially when you have young. They're the youngest team in the league, especially when you have young guys. So to me, this would have happened even if he had 7 points in seven games. If the same thing happened, the same type of incidents, regardless of the start, they had to go down this road just to keep the division out of the room. And as Jeff Gordon said, keep the distraction out of the room.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm just saying it's a lot easier when you look at the numbers and say, okay, we're going to get rid of this guy. So, but, you know, we'll see how it plays out. We'll see if they miss that number on the back end when it's over.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, Tom, we got to get to Nick Foligno here. So
you're out.
You're out.
I'm sure he will be much better than I
no,
was.
No.
And he'll have a lot of great insight on what's going on there with Patrick Laine joining the group, which will be fun to hear.
Well, we're definitely going to be asking him about that. But thanks so much for joining us, Tom. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Great having Tom on, Sean. And before we get to Nick, we've teased it enough, Nick Foligno from the Columbus Blue Jackets, their captain. Before we get to him, a couple of other things that we do have to talk about. They involve general managers, one that's working and now has two jobs, and the other that no longer wants his job and resigned from it. Let's start there. Jim Rutherford, the Pittsburgh Penguins general manager, resigned. He literally, it was a couple hours after we were done recording last week. So the timing, again, next time I talk to Jim, we're going to have to talk about his timing here, because we could have come back and done more, but we had our show, everything done. And then he goes out and resigns. And once I peeled myself up off the floor, because I was stunned that he did, I tried to start analyzing and evaluating exactly why in my own mind. And I've been asked the question, Sean. I went on NHL Network and NHL Radio, you know, what do you think has happened here? What insight? I'm like, I don't know. And sometimes I think it's okay to just say, you don't know, and like wait for things to happen. We don't do that anymore in this business, but I don't know. I really don't.
I don't think anybody knows except for Jimmy, right? Like, there's been all kinds of speculation and, you know, I think the pandemic and being isolated has led to a lot of people to do some soul searching and try and figure out what they want to do with their lives and what's important to them. And, you know, I think all those things are playing into it. And then, you know, the Penguins are not the team that I think he envisioned when he built it for this year. You know, they've been decimated by injuries. It's just, so far there's been one big trade that's been made in this season. I think it's going to be really hard to trade. And you know, if anybody's going to make a trade, it would have been Jimmy. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know either. And I'm comfortable in saying I don't know, because I don't think anybody, I don't even think the most plugged in people in Pittsburgh know. And, you know, there's been a lot of competing theories that have come out of there. And that's always entertaining as an outsider to kind of watch those that are close to the Penguins and cover them on a daily basis, kind of sort out their differences in trying to figure out what's happened with that team. But, you know, maybe someday, the one thing that I was very clear was this was not, I'm done with hockey.
Right.
You know, he's under contract for this year, you know, and then he doesn't know what he wants to do once that passes. So, you know, let's see what happens, but the Penguins have some serious decisions to make, right? They need to find a GM. Patrick Alvin is the temporary GM. He's been with the club for almost 20 something years now. But they're looking for a new GM. Chris Drury, I believe, just got permission. John Ferguson from the Bruins just got permission. There was some talk that they wanted to talk to Tom Fitzgerald, who had been there for a long time. You think about those Penguins, right? 2 years ago, they had the greatest front office in the history of mankind. Billy Guerin's with the Wild now. Fitzgerald's with the Devils. Carmonas was fired. Botterill was with the Sabres, and now he's with Seattle. So they went from having maybe the deepest front office to one of the most barren when it comes to experience, and now they have to figure out how to fill that hole.
Well, Chris Drury's name being out there was very interesting to me. He is certainly an up-and-coming general manager at some point. He's done a terrific job with the Rangers. He's involved in all their decisions. You look at the turnaround in Hartford for the Rangers, that's all Chris Drury right there. So that's an interesting one. But just to go one more on this point, I think this job, and I would think you would agree with me, Sean, the Penguins job is an elite job in the National Hockey League. And to me, if I'm an if I'm a Chris Drury right now, you know, or, you know, a general manager, whoever it may be, I'm so enticed by this job because you walk into this job, you still have an opportunity to win with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Chris Letang. That window won't stay open forever, but you have an opportunity to win with those guys, and then you'll have the opportunity to mold this team the way you see fit too. And it might be a long journey back after those guys are done, but you kind of get the best of both worlds. If you're an up and coming GM that really wants to sink his teeth into a team, have an opportunity to win, to get this team back righted for the way they want to go, and then make it your own.
It's a small window, man. And the hurt that's on the back end of that window, like we just talked about Jimmy, and he loves to trade. He's emptied the cupboards, man. Like yeah, they're trying to figure out how to fill a roster right now. They're so banged up on D, right, that they can't even find six healthy ones. And there's not a ton on the farm. There's not a ton of draft capital. So the things that a lot of GMs are really good at, which is developing players and identifying players and using draft capital, you don't have those options here. I really think, to me, if you're the Penguins – those guys might be attractive, but I almost think you have to go with somebody that has a ton of experience that can write things really quickly, not build, but write them really quickly and continue.
Well, I mean, it's just two different ways to look at it, but yeah. I don't know that I necessarily know that there's either one is wrong, you know? So it's interesting. It'll be very interesting to see what they do because it is an elite job in the NHL, and it's a very high profile GM job in the NHL because of the team and the players on that team.
You know what else is an elite job and an elite GM job?
What?
Team Canada.
Well, I was just going to bring it up. That was the other one we wanted to talk about. The guy who has two jobs, Doug Armstrong, St. Louis Blues GM, and today was named the general manager for Team Canada and the 2022 Olympics. We don't even yet know if NHL players are going to be there. We hope it's been talked about, but there is no official agreement in place, but Hockey Canada says we're going to put our management team in place, and they got Doug Armstrong in there in the GM seat. Ken Holland is a part of it, Don Sweeney, Ron Francis, and the one that intrigued me the most is Roberto Luongo, gold medal winner for Team Canada, is now going to be running their goaltending, is my assumption. I don't think he's going to run the forwards.
No, I would assume he is, and I would assume, you know, he's part of that goaltending excellence department down in Florida, right? Like he's one of those guys with a lair who's really kind of rethought how teams approach their goaltending and how important it is. So I'm sure he'll be valuable, and there's a few Canadian goaltenders to sort through, but, you know, great for Army. Like, he's done so much in the last couple of years. I thought he was a good GM for a long time, and very much like Jim Rutherford, like he's never shy. You know, he looks at his team and he says, all right, we got a chance and I'm going to do everything I can to make it happen. I'm going to fire my coach. I'm going to make a big trade. I'm going to do whatever it takes to give my team the best chance. And then he wins a cup and it all gets validated. And all of a sudden he's the GM of Team Canada, which is, you know, like I said, a very high profile job, a very stressful job. If they don't win gold, you know, you're a failure. And that's a pretty tough, in a short tournament, that's a pretty tough legacy to live with. You know, you could put together the best team possible. You know, I think back to that gold medal game between the US and Canada, the Crosby golden goal game, right? Like that Canadian team is so celebrated, and that US team, which was fantastic, is an afterthought, and it's one overtime goal that celebrates that differentiates the legacy of both those teams and both those GMs.
Yeah, absolutely. And Army served on the management teams of that team in 2010 and the Olympic team that won gold in 2014. So he's got a lot of experience with the Olympics as well. So good for him. Man's got a lot of work ahead of him, but I mean, it's a lot of pressure, Sean, but wouldn't you love to be the guy to put together Team Canada? I mean, think of the resources you got and the roster you could put together. I mean, hard decisions, but, you know, a lot of fun decisions. The great fantasy hockey team that it would be, that it will be. So that'll
be he's got plenty of time.
A lot of time. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, he's got a year, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, in that year, there's no distractions until we get this sorted out. You know, he's going to be sitting in his office or in a hotel room on the road, you know, no, no going out for dinner, no doing a ton of other things. You can just think about hockey 24/7.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, that was Rutherford. That was Doug Armstrong. So now let's bring in a player. We've teased it enough. Nick Foligno from the Columbus Blue Jackets joins us right now. Nick, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Just it's a sunny day here in Columbus, which is rare. So I'm enjoying this.
That's all right. We're dealing with about 2 feet of snow here.
Oh, yeah.
Something along those lines. So dug out. All good, though. All right. Let's get right to it, Nick. You got a new guy. He played last night. I think he's recognizable. His name is Patrick Laine. What'd you think?
Instantly impressed just with his abilities. I mean, first of all, great guy. I mean, right away when we traded him or traded for him, you know, he like texted the group and was really into it and you know, already kind of trying to get his grips on how things run here. So when you hear a guy like that, it's excited and wants to be a part of things. I think it gets you excited about him. And then just his abilities on the ice, you know, his shot, his vision, his playmaking ability. I mean, even on after 2 weeks, it was on display yesterday. So it's exciting to see.
You mentioned his shot, and we were talking about this at the top of the podcast. You know, I think he had 7 shot attempts last night, but it still seemed like you wanted. As you watched, you're like, shoot the puck, shoot the puck. Is it something? And you know, I brought up that it must be weird for a new guy to come in and be like, I'm going to shoot the puck and, you know, kind of glom on. But that's his job. At some point, do you as players go to him and say, hey, man, it's okay. Shoot as much as you want. That's what we want.
Yeah, I think at some point, I think for sure he probably felt like they were, you know, keying on him too at a certain point. I know in the power play a couple of times it looked like we thought he could shoot, but then he said, no, they're in my lane, obviously knowing what kind of abilities he has. So, you know, we're going to learn that part of him. I think as he gets more comfortable, he'll find his looks and we'll make sure we get him the puck in those areas. But, you know, it's funny though. He's one of those guys. You get why he has, I think I heard already 140 goals in the league. I mean, he doesn't really have to be told to shoot too much. He is going to find a way to rip the puck. And it's nice to have that guy on your team.
And also just to play off of that, Nick, just the idea of, it's no secret that, you know, you guys have needed goals, right? And you needed power play goals in particular too. When the trade happened and so much was going on around that, but realize the player that you're one of the players you're getting back is this type of goal scorer. I'm curious, what did that do for everybody else on that team in understanding what you were getting and, you know, how much this could go to solving that issue that you guys have?
Well, yeah, I think you said, I think when you get a player of his magnitude who has the ability to score goals on his own, you know, I think it just, it loosens and frees everybody else up. You know, I think when you bring a guy like that in, first of all, now you're starting to see how he goes about it and then, you know, finds his openings and you can only learn from it. So, you know, when we picked him up, I was excited to see, okay, well, how does he score? I mean, I've been in this league a long time. It's interesting to see a guy who's kind of figured that part out. You know, maybe we can help him in other aspects, but I'm going to try and learn something from him. And, but then, you know, I think for everyone's mindset, when you add a guy like that, especially on our power play, which we know has struggled, to have a weapon, like that, where a guy, he's going to find ways to shoot the puck. He's going to find ways to break teams down with that shot. I think it makes us all become more lethal. And, you know, one thing about a power play too, it's amazing what it does for your 5-on-5 play. When you can get some power play goals and get some confidence in guys. And, you know, if he's a part of that and solving, you know, our power play problems, then, you know, maybe it opens up a lot of guys 5-on-5, their confidence starts to come back. And then we become an even more dangerous team, in that way as well. So that's what I think he brings. And we're excited about adding to our team.
Nick, I'm going to make you give away one of your secrets now. When you look at the Columbus Blue Jackets and the amount of change that's happened in the last couple of years and this trade, Pierre-Luc for Laine and Roslovic, just being the last part of it, you know, all the guys that left through free agency and everything else that's happened, Columbus hasn't really ever changed their identity, what they do, no excuses. You're a huge part of that with the leadership core. How do you keep the Blue Jackets trucking in the midst of everything that goes on there?
Well, I think it's just a belief and a understanding of the guys. I mean, we've been fortunate enough to have this core in place for a little while here. And I think that's how you become a good team in this league. You know, you add some pieces here and there, but the core stays intact. And so I just trust, you know, that we're going to go out and figure ourselves out. Even right now, you know, we're not playing our best hockey, but I know that we will. And I know that, you know, and then let's not kid ourselves. It has to be sooner rather than later here. We don't have an 82 game schedule to figure things out, but you know, more times than not, we go back to what makes us successful. And I think we had a really good practice today talking about that and actually going out and doing it. And just that belief in each other, you know, that the way that we play as a group allows everyone to have success as a whole. And it causes fits for a lot of teams, and it's worked for us. We believe in it because we know it works. And I think when you have that from top down, it just brings everybody into the fold, no matter where you come from, what team, you fall into place. And that's what we try to do here. And, you know, it's been fun. It's been fun. You know, when you have success in this league, that's what makes it most fun. You know, it's as a team, you know, the personal success is great. We've all kind of tasted that, but when you're making the playoffs every year, when you're going a little deeper, when, you know, that's what makes playing in the National Hockey League a blast. And I think that's what we're trying to do and continue to do. And I think we have a good team that can do that again this year.
At the same time, Nick, and I don't want to rehash, you know, old memories here, but it's not that they're not that old. I mean, was this a tough situation to deal with, knowing that you had a teammate who you've been in battle with in the games who didn't want to be there anymore? And look, I mean, kind of showed it in his play too, a little bit.
Yeah, I think yes, in the sense that, you know, you just, for us, it was a young player. You know, sometimes when you have guys leave, like Brett and Bob, you know, they went through free agency, right? They have a right at some point in your career to decide where you want to play. And I think for us, with all, you know, the excitement around Luke and what kind of player we thought he could be for this franchise, it was a little bit shocking just to hear that he wanted out. But at the end of the day, and I don't hold anything against Luke. I mean, he has to do what makes him happy. And that's first and foremost. I care more about the person than I do the player, you know. And so if he wasn't happy here, that's, you know, that's something that I can't control, first of all. But we want to make sure that he's happy wherever he's playing. I just, you know, for us, I think it's always just, you know, you try to look at what can you do better, or is there something with our team? And when you kind of start checking up all the boxes, that really there's nothing we could have done better. I think we provided a great atmosphere for him to play in, you know, and the team has successful every year. Great group of guys, good, well-coached team. I mean, you just start going down the line. It's just like, you know what, there's nothing you can do. And at that point, it's time to move on, you know? And I think that's where you kind of just come to it and say, you know what, there's nothing that we can do to change his mind, and you don't hold anything against him, but now it's time to move on. And I think that's where that tipping point got to. And we were luckily able to get two really good players from Winnipeg for him. And, you know, I know Luke's going to go on and do great things, but you can't control how someone's feeling. What I do care about is that when you're on that team, though, that you're doing whatever you can to help our team win. And, you know, I think Luke would be the first one to say that wasn't really the case towards the end. And, you know, now we got two guys in here that want to help make a difference for our team. And we're excited about that.
With the pieces that come in, do you have your, here's how you play for Torts speech memorized?
Yes and no. I think everyone hears stories, and then when they meet them, you know, they realize quickly, like, wow, what I hear is definitely not what I see in front of me now, you know? And I'm tired of having to give that speech to everybody about, you know, the worry of Torts. I think, let's be honest, I think we've all grown. I've grown as a player. I'm sure Torts has grown as a coach. You know, we got Mike Delzato on our team now, who had him in New York, and can't believe the difference, you know, in Torts now. And I think it's just a more mature coach that he is now, right? He understands the things that have gone well and gone wrong in his career. And like all of us, I think as players, you try to do things, okay, that didn't work for me, I'm going to try this. And so I'm sure I think he's a better version of himself. And I think he's probably a better coach, and lucky to have him. I mean, look what he's done for our organization. So I think when those guys see that, they realize quickly, like, you know, this guy, he's, first of all, he's so passionate. You can tell, like, they all say that right away, man, he gets me fired up to play. And, you know, so I think right away, those guys are just excited to play for him because he's a coach that cares and wants to get the best out of him. And, I think they're having fun so far.
And it never hurts to get pushed, right? I mean, don't you want to get pushed?
I just feel like that's the whole point of being an athlete. You know, that's, to me at least, why would you, you know, if you're getting out there every day and you're having to figure out ways to make yourself better, then what's the point of having a coach? I mean, that's the whole point, is they see things that you're maybe blind to because you're so consumed in other things. That's what I like about Torts. Even when you think you're playing well, there's other areas that you can improve in. And until I'm done playing, I want that. That, you know, once the coach stops telling you stuff or people stop telling you ways to improve, I think you're done. You know, so I think as a coach, that's admirable about Torts, and that he's never going to stop pushing you. Even when you're 35, 37 years old, he's going to find something that you can improve on to help our team. And it's always, you know, that's the one thing too. Like, it's always geared towards how are we going to improve as a team? You know, it's not picking on you and, oh, you don't do this well. It's no, we need you to do this well, so it helps our team have success. And, you know, some guys, yeah, they get burrs up about it, but you know, for the most part, it's always about what's going to help our team have success. And that's the reason why we've had success since he's been here.
I'm going to change the subject here for a second. I got to ask you about this. And it's a two-part question. One, the goal that Texier scored the other day in the shootout, did you know that he could do that? And is there other secrets?
That's my move.
That's your move? Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I was like, are there other secrets in his bag? And B, can you do that shot?
Yeah, I was kind of mad that I've never seen it. He put a little flair on it. I've never seen the one-handed. That's pretty impressive. I do the two-hand flick through the five-hole. So I'm a little mad that he one-upped me like that. But he could at least warn me before he went that he was going to embarrass me. But no, it was all joking aside, that was incredible to watch. I mean, I did not know he had that in him. I'd never seen it before. Even in practice, I'd never seen him do it. So he's a quiet kid, but man, he's got some skills, and to put that on display at a time when we really needed that win too, that was an impressive goal, and I was really happy for him. He's had a great year to start.
You know, and I remember it was a couple of years ago when you guys went, you know, you were in the playoffs, and he came up, and he was kind of like a revelation. You know, it was just like, whoa, the skill that this guy has, and then he went on all the injury stuff that he had to deal with, but the player he's become now, is this the player that you saw when he initially came up, or is he even that much better than that?
Yeah, no, I honestly think he's improved even. I mean, let's not forget he missed a lot of hockey too last year with just everything that he had going on. So this is a guy that's still really raw and has a lot to learn, and he's already doing the things that he's doing on the ice. So the one thing about Tex that I admire so much is just his tenacity. You know, the way he plays the game, he is just no nonsense between whistles, and then right, you know, it's all business. It's no pushing, shoving and chirping. And I think the language barrier kind of does that as well, but he is just all business. And you admire about that, because a lot of times you can get caught up in the awe of the NHL at a young age, and he just wants to play and he wants to be the best. And you can just see that in him. And sometimes he almost goes overboard. Like, he goes too hard. He throws passes too hard at guys. And, you know, it's a backdoor tap in, but he rifles it over there because he wants to get it over to you. So, you know, he's learning that part, the finite points of the game, but man, you can see the raw talent that he has. And as he gets coached and understands the league more, I think he's just going to get better and better.
We're about 3 weeks. I think we're 3 weeks exactly into the season, even though we played more games than we normally would in 3 weeks. What's your impressions of the new Central Division?
You know what? I've enjoyed it. I personally just, I'm tired of playing the Washingtons and Pittsburghs and, you know, and just having those battles on a nightly basis with those guys. And it's just nice to change it up. I think in this setting, especially, you know, to get some new teams and especially some great teams. I like seeing what other teams, I don't really, you know, it's amazing how I don't really know much about these teams anymore because we don't play them as much. So it's enjoyable for me just seeing some new teams, especially being in the league this long. So I kind of like it. I don't know how it's all going to shake out in years to come, but, you know, if we could figure out a way to make the divisions a little bit more geographically make sense too, I think it would be really beneficial for the league. And I like it. I think it reminds me of the old Central Division when how hard that, you know, coming into those games were. I was playing in Ottawa at the time, but I remember every time you come in to play Chicago, St. Louis, you know, Nashville, even at the time, like there was a grind to play against those teams. So Minnesota was in there as well. And so you just, yeah, I like the new look. I just like the freshness of playing these teams. And obviously we know Tampa well, but you know, just nice to change it up and play against some different players, and I'm having fun.
Yeah, I think we're all still trying to figure out the division, because you got a number of teams in that division that haven't played more than seven games, and that have played 9, 10, 11. So there is that. But I wanted to ask you, because you guys started out And this is the last one from me. You guys started out on a 4-game road trip. You got a 3-gamer coming up. What do you do on the road now?
It's tough. That's one thing I had to kind of pep talk myself after the road, was just how different this season really is. It kind of hit home. The first game, you're just excited to play. We're in Nashville, and then you have a day off or a practice day the next day, and you're stuck in your hotel. You know, like you're really not doing anything. And this is Nashville, where normally you're at the honky tonk having a water, and so it's a different, and also let's be honest too, like that's a way to get away from it, right? You're not 24/7 hockey. It's nice when you go into these cities, you get to enjoy a little bit of flavor of the town and what they have to offer. So your mind's not constantly thinking of the game and what shift. And so now there's just so much more downtime with your thoughts, and especially on the road where you're not really supposed to be hanging out. So we're all in our own rooms, and it's weird, you know, and I'm not complaining because we get to play hockey. Let's be honest. There is way worse things going on in the world. It's just, it's a different form of playing hockey. This is a lot different than the bubble. The bubble, I said, was more hand holding. They kind of made it like we're in our own little world. So you had some freedom to go out and sit at a restaurant, and there's none of that now. You're eating either Uber Eats or from the hotel. And so there's some discipline that's going to go into this, where mentally you're just going to have to prepare yourself. And I had to kind of do that as well. Just like, this is the way it is. And there's no complaining. There's no making excuses. Everybody's dealing with it. But you got to find a way to get up for games and to try to, you know, take your mind off of something and then do something else. So it's going to be a challenge for guys, because the norm is kind of thrown out the window, and we got to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves mentally, for the mental health side, and then physically as well, because sitting around all day for athletes isn't the most ideal situation. So I'm sure as we go along here, we'll learn to make it better, but they've done a good job. I mean, we're back playing, which is most important, and we'll figure all that other stuff out as we go.
I hope your room in Nashville didn't have a view of Tootsie's.
Yeah, how unfair would that be?
That'd be torture. That's like home ice advantage.
Seriously. No. Oh man, I think I kept the blinds shut just so I wouldn't get depressed.
There you go.
But no, it was tough to just be in those cities and not be able to go do the normal things. You take it for granted for sure.
Yeah, my last one for you, and I'm going to go back to how we opened the show, and I want a player's perspective, because Dan and I and Tom Galitti argued this a little bit. As a player, you look at what Leon Draisaitl's done and Connor McDavid have done to start the season. Do you believe that one of those two guys can score 100 points this year?
Well, are they doing well this year? Just kidding. I do, actually, yeah. I mean, they just – especially them together – they just create so much, and you can tell they have the chemistry to just make nights miserable on teams. And when they get rolling, I mean, it's just, they're hard to stop, you know, even on nights where you might slow them down, they're still finding a way to get 1 or 2 points. And, you know, I think that's just the makeup of them two together. They figured out what makes it work. So I personally think that they have the ability to do it. I think it'd be unbelievable. I think it's an incredible feat in this NHL right now, but if any two can do it, it's probably those two.
And good for you that you do. It'll be a long way off before you would have to play them, or you might have to play them. So
yeah,
that benefits.
I'm gonna be right
you.
Behind them on the scoring. I'll be at 99 points this year.
Great stuff. Hey Nick, great stuff, man. Thanks so much for hopping on with us. All right.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Great stuff as always there from Nick. Sean, you know, he is our first two-time guest as a player, first player who is a two-time guest on this podcast.
And why wouldn't he be? A, he's a great talker, and B, this is a great podcast to come on. So all the players that are listening, you too can be two-time guests if you reach out and want to be on the show.
We are wonderful company. I will say that. We are great conversationalists. We're wonderful company. But anyway.
They're really attracted to your modesty, Dan. That's why they come on.
That's exactly right. So just quickly before we sign off, obviously, look, the COVID stuff, the COVID protocol stuff is going on, and we haven't mentioned it yet, but we can't get out of it without mentioning it. The Devils had 14 players on the COVID protocol list as of yet. That was yesterday, Tuesday. They're shut down right now. So look, Buffalo Sabres, same deal. It stinks, right, Sean? I mean, it stinks that teams, I mean, we would have had, I think it would have 10 game night, instead it turns into an 8-game night or 7-game night. So it stinks that these things are happening, but it's happening across the sporting landscape. Well, it's happening across the world, but it's happening across the sporting landscape. we're no different. I think it's just part of the we're all gotten used to a new normal. I think it's just part of what we're going to have to get used to this season too.
Yeah. And I look at it and you think about the teams that haven't missed any games with minor COVID issues, or you look at a team like Dallas who missed the start of the season and now they're back and they're playing regularly. Vegas,
playing well, by the way.
Yeah. And playing well. Vegas is coming back today. They start practicing again and they'll be playing by the weekend. So, you know, there's policies in place to deal with it and there's some short-term pain and look, I think everybody's being overcautious. And you mentioned the Devils. That list is really big in part because there's guys on it like Vantanen, who just came from wherever he came from into Newark, and he has to serve a quarantine. You know, Aaron Dell, the same thing. So there's guys on it other than COVID guys. Carrick had a baby. His wife had a baby, and congratulations to him. But that puts him on the list. So, yeah, we're going to miss some games. Everybody's missed some games. Look, I just saw, and before we get out of here, we're going to make our picks on another big event this year. I just saw in the Super Bowl, there's two guys from the Kansas City Chiefs whose status for the game is up in the air because they got haircuts, and their barber ended up being on the COVID positive list after he was tested. So I haven't gotten my haircut since – we got locked up on March, whatever it was last year. So I'm almost on a year without a haircut.
Looks like it.
It's glorious.
It looks like it.
And so this is just the way it's going to be. So, but somehow the NFL survived it. They had that one game where they had to move it like five times, and they've had some other issues where players have missed games, but they're going to play in the Super Bowl this weekend. And who do you think is going to win, Dan?
It's the Chiefs. Come on. I mean, it's gotta be the Chiefs. Mahomes is that good. I'm going Chiefs. Brady's the greatest of all time. Going Chiefs. You?
I think for sentimentality's sake, I have to go with the Bucks and Gronk and Brady. And you know, it's going to come down to whichever defense figures the other one out first. And I don't know who that defense is, but you know what? It's going to be a lot of fun to watch a game that I don't care about at all, and right. I don't care who wins. I'm just going to enjoy it.
Yeah, no doubt. And by the way, I'm working on a story on this right now. What a year for Tampa in sports. The Rays go to the World Series. The Lightning win the Stanley Cup. They host the Super Bowl, and their team is in it. It's a pretty good year for – pretty good for a little run here for the Tampa Bay sports community.
And they're hosting the Raptors.
And right? They're hosting the Raptors. And the Tampa Bay Rowdies. I'm not sure what league. Soccer
That's
team.
That's the USL.
There you go. They were also in it. Anyway – enjoy the Super Bowl. Enjoy the hockey. I think the Chiefs are going to win. I think I'm right. And players should come on the podcast. I think we all figured this out. Right, Sean?
That's it. We'll talk to you next week.